You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Friday, November 16th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site, and this is your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers and part of the number one daily local sports podcast network, the Locked On Podcast Network. If you are not already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. Thank you, everyone. Hope let's get over 100 and have that 4.5 rating right now. And today's show is going to be the first Draft Friday podcast. We're going to start with a mailbag, but in the second and third parts of the show, we're going to be talking to Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword and The Step Back, looking at the draft class. And first, in a broad perspective, how the cast fit into it. And then secondly, we are going to be talking about Zion Williamson, who is the number one guy in everyone's draft board right now, and Trevor is going to get you really prepared to watch him to understand where he is right now as a prospect and get you pretty excited about him as well. But again, we're going to start with those mailbag questions. Thank you to everyone who submitted these questions. Got a lot of really good ones. If you want to submit them for the future, you can do so to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or to @lockedoncavs on Twitter. There'll be posts up on r/ClevelandCavs on Reddit as well as the Locked On Cavs and Fear the Sword Facebook pages. But first question this week comes from Sarah Claypool, and she asked via email, question that emerged while watching Cavs Wizards last night that I'd love to hear discussed on the podcast grab bag. Who would you protect if there was an expansion draft? Six players, preferably. So I think Andy Bailey, who used to write for Bleacher Report, I believe now writes for SLC Dunk, the SB Nation Jazz site, as well as hosts some NBA podcast. I think was the guy that kind of got this rolling. So shouts to Andy, who does a really good stats thread as well, if you don't follow him on Twitter. But if you're looking at six guys in the Cavs, you're clearly protecting Sexton. You're protecting Osman. You're going to protect Kevin Love. From there, I think you go Nance, Tristan, and then it's a little bit weird. It might be Clarkson. You know, I think Billy Preston doesn't count towards this because he's a two-way guy. I don't think Hood can be because he's unrestricted. Nwaba, same thing. I think your draft pick in 2019, your number one pick, is exempt from this as well. And if you just look at the Cavs roster, it's not a particularly robust group of long-term potential guys under contract for a long time. Zizic is probably ahead of Clarkson just because of his number and his potential as well. So if you're going six, I think it's Love. I think it's Sexton. I think it's Jetty Osman. I think it's Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance, and Ante Zizic. If you go to 7 and 8, I think you're getting into the Clarks and some of the guys further down that list, but that's where you are right now. That's not a particularly, you know, great group. There aren't, I think, many hard calls there. The Cavs are also in a position where they have a lot of contracts that are going to be off their books in a year. When you look at George Hill, when you look at J.R. Smith, when you look at Kyle Korver, these are guys that are probably not going to be in the team next year anyway. Jordan Clarkson's getting closer to a contract year. So these aren't exactly guys, young core pieces they're going to want to hold on to for the long term. Even Tristan, you know, is closer to the end of his deal than he is at the beginning at this point. So there are questions, I think, about who you would really keep, but I think this is also a kind of a weird exercise for the Cavs because I think they're sort of obvious picks, and when you look at the rules of how this would be set up, can't protect Hood, you can't protect Nwaba, you don't have no need to protect your picks, you just keep that guy. I mean, if it takes up a slot, obviously, if the 2019 pick has to be protected in this, I don't think he would be. So if it's Zion Williamson, you're obviously going to protect that guy. It's anyone you're taking a lottery, it's going to be protect that guy. It's also weird that they have three centers that I would probably keep, so it's tough. It's a weird roster to do it with. If you Sarah and anyone else out there wants to share yours, email the pod, tweet the pod, tweet me, and I'll share some of these next week if you guys want to get that in there. And the next question comes from Twitter. It's from JFK Kosol. That's Justin Kosol on Twitter. He asks, does Sexton keep starting even with Hill returning from injury? So I think he should. I don't think we know this yet. I do not think that we know what exactly their juice plans are yet. And I think it's one of those things that he will get asked about by me, by Joe Vardon, by somebody when he actually speaks to the media when George Hill is back. We don't know when George Hill is going to come back, number one. It could, you know, it seems like he might be practicing. I think Friday, today, and when you're hearing this podcast later today, will you get an update on him? I would expect on the 16th. But right now, we don't know really what's up with G. Hill. But I think when he comes back, I think Sexton has to start. I don't really know what that looks like in terms of if it's Hood going to the bench, if it's Jetty's going to come off the bench, if Hill's going to start alongside Sexton, something that I really like the idea of, but we haven't seen very much in any capacity this season. I think Sexton's been too good. I think he scored. He's looked more comfortable as a starter the last few games. He's making strides, and yes, he's playing more, and I think you have to keep playing more, and that's the more important thing than starting. But I like him starting too. I think he should be starting going forward. It's more important for me, and for the Cavs, in my opinion, it's more important that he actually plays, and more important for me that he's getting minutes in the right situations. Getting him away from Jordan Clarkson on bench units isn't a bad idea either. So for me, I think he has to start. I don't really know what the right answer to that is in terms of who he should start with. If Hill should continue starting as well as a two guard with Hood going to the bench, that's probably my top pick. Long term, I would probably say the starting lineup when everyone's healthy that I would most want to keep rolling with would be Sexton, Hill, Osman, Thompson, and Love. That's where I would, I think, stand going forward once everyone's back. But for the short term, I think, you know, maybe what you do is this. You play Hill, Sexton, Jetty, Hood, and Thompson. You play a little smaller, but that allows you to JR goes back to the bench. You know, Nance can go back to the bench as well. And that way you're not playing those two big lineups as much anymore, even though they've been okay-ish. And it allows you to not have to bump anyone you don't want to the bench. And JR can go back to doing what he was doing. So that's what I would do. But I 100% think no matter what they decide to do, I do think that that I think Colin Sexton should be a starter. At CoolHandMatt asks on Twitter, is anyone besides Sexton not on the trade block? I would say quickly on this because it's a little early, but I would say Jetty isn't on the trade block. I would be shocked if Nance is on the trade block as well. I don't know why they would trade him. I think probably anybody else could be had if the right deal presented itself. But I think those are the guys that would be the protectors on this roster. The next question comes via email from Corey Huey. He says the Rockets nearly upset the Durant Warriors last year playing bully ball. Was David Griffin's game plan to surround LeBron and the shooters flawed? I want to push back on the premise of this question. The Rockets did not play bully ball. The Rockets played isolation ball, and they hit a lot of threes, and they got to the rim. That's not bully ball. Bully ball would be post-ups and dragging, kind of doing what the Cavs did in the 15 finals when it was Dele and LeBron should have won finals MVP for that effort. In my opinion, I don't think what David Griffin did leading this Cavs team in that time was flawed. I think what you saw was a guy that made the most of a situation. He built a roster a certain way. Obviously, he had some limitations, but I think if you just look at what the Cavs did in 17 with that offense being, I think that 17 team was even better than the 16 team, and I don't think that's even close. Their offense was not dissimilar to what Houston did. Houston's was a little bit different, and their defensive personnel was certainly better. But it was isolation-heavy basketball. I wouldn't say that's bully ball. It's shooters, and it's a guy that could roll to the rim, and it's isolation ball. And the Cavs were not dissimilar to that. So I don't think what David Griffin did was flawed at all. So we got a string of questions here from ClevelandBread52 on Twitter. The first one is, should the Cavs trade Korver to the Celtics for one of their first-round picks? I'll just say if they could do that, yeah, why not? I don't know if that's available. And can Billy Preston get more playing time? Billy Preston's on a two-way deal, so just hope everyone understands this. Billy is a very raw player. The Cavs can only have him in the NBA for up to 45 days this season. He's not even starting with the Charge last time I checked, so for me, I would just let him play down there. There's no need to rush Billy Preston. He's a long, long way away from being an NBA guy, and if you want to use his 45 days, don't burn them now. Let him just play in the G League and get better. His next question, or it could be a she as well, it is a heap. It's a sort of violet. If we keep losing, we will keep our pick that the Hawks have right now. Top 10 protected, yes. So is there any way we could trade Kevin Love for a first-round pick so we can have two and maybe draft Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett? So it's R.J. Barrett. And look, you could trade Kevin Love. You could maybe get a first-round pick, but you are not going to get a lottery pick for Kevin Love. I would be shocked if you got an unprotected lottery pick in 2018 for Kevin Love. You look at the maybe you could freak out the Wizards into doing it, right? Maybe that maybe that's like the crazy scenario where they like just feel like they have to do something and you do that. Okay. That's the one scenario. But you run down the teams in the lottery right now and the teams that are likely to be in the lottery. Orlando, not going to do that. You know, Miami's not going to do that. Minnesota, like, not they're not going to trade for Kevin Love back. Brooklyn's not going to do that. The Bulls not going to do that. Knicks not going to do that. Suns not going to trade an unprotected pick for Kevin Love. Atlanta not going to trade an unprotected pick for Kevin Love. I think that's a very slim chance of happening. Almost 0% chance happening. In doing that, I very much understand the appeal of getting two lottery picks. Just don't think it's a very likely situation. And to go back to Korver real quick, I had a Ben Colvin asked via email, would you trade him to Philly? Could you get Fultz? Basically, was his question. I would be surprised if you could get Fultz for Korver, but if you could, I think Korver to Philly does make a lot of sense. But the Jared Bayless trade, him being going on in the Jimmy Butler trade, does make that math a little bit more difficult. It was Bayless was the guy that would have been sent to the Cavs when that was first linked a while back. So keep that in mind. Mike Muscala would sort of be the guy in expiring coming back, but we'll see. And then Cleveland Bread 52. His last question is. Is Mark Jackson an option for the Cavs head coaching gig? I don't think they're that far along in the process. I don't think Mark Jackson should be in the coaching search. I think if you're looking for the Cavs' next head coach, it's someone that I think should be more like a Kenny Atkinson, a Lloyd Pierce, a Brett Brown in his early days of Philly. You want a guy that's going to be good at player development, that is going to be good at bringing along a young team. Mark Jackson's not that. He's not a modern coach in terms of his systems either. Exactly the wrong type of head coach, in my opinion. I don't quite get the infatuation with Mark Jackson. I think if you're a team that's going to be in the playoffs, I think you could talk yourself into it. I don't think Mark Jackson coming in and heading up a rebuild really makes a whole lot of sense. That would be the complete wrong direction, in my opinion. It's too early to know names. It's not like the NFL where you can like pick out a coordinator and say that guy should coach the Browns because he coached under Andy Reid and connect those trees. It's a little harder to sort of track some of that stuff. That those responsibilities I think are less public to some degree. At least less talked about openly to some degree. I think that makes this evaluation process harder. You could look at like a Spurs assistant and sort of be like, that's the guy, or a Warriors assistant, like that's a guy. But I would want to get someone like their own Kenny Atkinson, like the Nets did, like Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta right now, like the guy that the Suns hired whose name I can't pronounce right now, and Brett Brown is in Philly. That's the kind of coach, if I was in charge, that's what I would do, not Mark Jackson. And the last question comes from Kevin Stankiewicz, who asked, is there anything from an X's and O's standpoint that Larry Drew has done radically different? I'm going to say no. What Larry Drew has done is basically, I think, simplify things defensively, and that would be the big change. They're not switching everything anymore. They really just have stopped doing that. They do some small switching, but they're not doing everything. It doesn't fit the personnel, so I think that makes sense. He's playing a little more conservatively, I think, overall. I think the actions are not as particularly complex, or maybe running it and things is orchestrated. I do think the ball's moving a little bit better under him for whatever reason. But I don't think there's anything drastic. I think it is the framework of what Ty was doing. I think the big change would just be defensively. They're not switching everything and they're playing a more conservative style of basketball. I think the pick and rolls, the lot of mid-range shots that was a thing under Ty as well is still there. A lot of that other stuff, the type of plays they're in for Kyle Korver, for example, are very much the same type of screens. The wheels for Rodney Hood, where he comes around a screen and is taking a jump shot off a quick pass or dribble handoff around the middle of the floor is still the same. They're functionally the same. Just the defense, I think, is a little bit more conservative and less switch heavy. But we're going to take a quick break. Thank you again for all those great questions. Submit them to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or at lockedoncavs on Twitter in the future to submit the next ones. And then when I am back, Trevor McNaughty and I are going to be talking about the draft and then talking about Zion Williamson. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And joining me now is Trevor Magnotti. He is a writer at For the Sword, where every week you can find his draft viewing guide and as well as some player breakdowns. And you also can find his writing over at The Step Back. Trevor, what's going on?
How's it going?
It's going good. So every Friday, Trevor is going to be joining me to break down a draft prospect. Today, we're going to talk about Zion Williamson because I feel like we are obligated to talk about him. I feel like based on what he's done to start the year, the numbers he's putting up, the highlights he's had, he's the obvious guy to start with. But before we do that, we're going to look at what this class that we're kind of evaluating looks like. So the Cavs are going to likely be in a position, unless something drastically changes, to pick very high in the draft. They are going to be in a position to maybe not have the number one pick because of the lottery odds and because the Suns are also bad and whatnot, but they're going to have a lottery pick. I do not see a scenario for this season where they do not end up with the pick that could go to the Hawks that falls outside the top 10. Trevor, when the Cavs are looking at this draft class, considering this, they will be in the lottery this year and maybe they aren't the next year. Is this a good year, broadly speaking, on paper right now to be in the lottery?
Well, it's definitely a good year to be as bad as they are. I think that more than the past 2 years, which have had, you know, seven or eight guys that could be considered potential guys that are going to come in and be high quality multi-year starters, this year probably only has three or four of those guys. It's more like a traditional, more like your traditional draft class where you got one clear cut guy at the top, two through five look like they're pretty well set. And then there's going to be a little bit of a drop off towards the back half of the top 10. I think that this year's class is going to be a little bit weaker, and it's a really good year for the Cavs to be in contention for the number one pick, as opposed to being, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth in the lottery odds, because the fate that they're going to end up with picking sixth as opposed to picking fourth is a lot different. Once those top five guys are gone, there is a big drop off between that and the next tier to me at this point. So I think that is the biggest benefit to the Cavs being as bad as they are, is that they're going to be in position, even with the smooth down lottery odds, to get one of the few guys with a legitimate shot at being a quality core piece moving forward, as opposed to if they were, say, this bad last year, competing with what was at one point eight teams all within two games of each other at the bottom of the lottery table. I think that this is the year for them to bottom out, if they're going to bottom out, because you've got a clear-cut guy at the top in Zion Williamson. You've got two or three other guys who are in contention to be, you know, potential building blocks moving forward, and then not a whole lot else.
So right now, if we're saying this on November 15th, as we record this, who are those five guys that you say are the clear top five of this draft class? And after that, then you have the drop off. Who are those standard bearer guys for this class?
Well, it's nice because three of them are on the same team, and that's Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, who we're all pretty well familiar with, and Cameron Reddish. Those were the top three recruits in this class. They all went to Duke. They're all playing together, and they're all probably going to be top five picks in this class.
A quick note on Reddish. People, I'm sure, saw the clip of Zion Williamson dunking where he got his head above the rim, like by his full head, the other night. The guy who threw him the pass was Cameron Reddish. Like, that's his big claim to fame so far this year, is being the dude who threw Zion Williamson that lob pass against Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, and he's been kind of the forgotten guy, but he is a potential top five pick in this class as well, and probably a potential top three pick. Supplementing them are two other freshmen that I really like, that I think have chances at star potential: North Carolina's Nasir Little, and then Oregon's Bol Bol, who is the son of Manute Bol, who played for the Sixers and the Warriors. He was 7'7". His son's 7'3". Has potential to be a very, very good center in the NBA. So that's kind of my top five. And then there's a big drop off to 6, 7, 8, who at this point I have as DeAndre Hunter of Virginia, Keldon Johnson of Kentucky, and then Sekou Doumbouya, who's the top international project. He plays over in France for Limoges. So those three guys I see as kind of your back end of the lottery potential starters, probably low star potential guys that I think there's a big step down from once you get past that top five.
Is there anyone outside of the top five that you could see making a jump from outside the top five to at least in the conversation of being a top five picker, maybe bumping one of these guys down the list a little bit?
Yeah, I think there are a couple guys who have kind of cemented themselves to potentially make that leap this year. Keldon Johnson, who I just mentioned, I think he has a shot at that. He looks very good for Kentucky early on, and I think has potential to be kind of that playmaking wing that is a very valuable player type in the league right now. And I think that teams are going to be really enticed by him, especially with how good he's looked defensively early in the season. I also really think that Darius Garland of Vanderbilt has potential just because he has shown some really nice shot making early in the season, and he's a little bit small, just like Trae Young, but I think has the potential to have a leap similar to Young in this class's hierarchy, just because of the lack of talent outside of the top five and his elite level shot making ability. I think that he's going to be a guy that potentially can make that jump. And the biggest wild card in this draft right now is Jontay Porter of Missouri, who looked phenomenal last season, was a guy that we were slating to be a lottery pick in a much deeper draft and is going to miss this year because of an ACL tear. So if he comes out and if he looks healthy going into the draft, I think that he's a guy who could potentially sneak up there because he's a high intellect two-way center that I think could be a model for where the league is headed in terms of that position. So I think that a smart team picking in the top five or six could reach up and grab him despite the injury concerns. And I think that he could end up being a player that has that type of value in the right situation.
We're going to take a quick break now that you have the context of this draft class, and then we're going to be back to talk about Zion Williamson. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers from myself and Trevor Magnotti. And we are back. So Trevor, Zion Williamson, the numbers, over 80% shooting from the field, the highlights he's putting up. He, even if, like, I think there are valid concerns about him just as a, like, what his body is going to let him be in the NBA. And you are, I don't watch enough college basketball to really, I think, properly evaluate what the adjustments would be. And obviously playing Eastern Michigan is very different than playing like a good ACC team or like playing in the tournament or getting to the NBA. But what he's doing is just like so overwhelming, so dominant, so like just freakish that it may, like when you just look at what he's doing and look at like the skill set he's doing and look at just like how much better he looks right now than some of these guys, just in terms of his like actual end result, in terms of just the highlights and just the percentages and everything and just how gaudy he's been. It feels like he like just feels like a guy that might just be like end up being number one in this class just because how freakish he is. But I also very much understand of the appeal of Barrett, the appeal of Reddish. But when you look at him, has what he's done to start the year changed his trajectory at all to you? Have you learned anything about him that you didn't feel like you knew when he was coming out of high school just as a prospect and going to play for Duke?
Yeah, I think that he's done a great job of proving himself in the ways that I wanted him to prove himself early on in this season. You know, I had him number three on my preseason board behind Barrett and Whittle, mostly because a lot of what we saw from him, even at the AAU level in high school, was him dominating lower level players. We saw a lot of his highlights come against, you know, those rural South Carolina teams that he ended up being matched up against, where there wasn't another player who was even going to be a D1 level prospect on the floor. And you saw plenty of highlights of him against them. I feel like more so than other players, and maybe it was just a factor of his freakish athleticism, he looked so much more dominant than anyone else he played in high school. And I really felt like we didn't get a good gauge of what he was at that level because of that. Now, having seen him in three games at the college level, I kind of am starting to figure out that maybe that was just because he is such a outlier high level athlete. And, you know, he has firmly cemented himself as the number one player in this class to me at this point, just through three games, just because he has shown every bit of the athletic dominance and every bit of the finishing and scoring ability that he showed in high school. And he's also showing some really nice, complex understanding of the game that I didn't really expect to see. You know, we didn't really get to see him in that context much in high school, but he has made some really nice plays, really nice decisions on both ends of the ball at Duke so far. And I think that he's making NBA level reads and NBA level plays on both sides. And I think that that's one of the big things that has swayed me in turning over from Barrett as the number one to Williamson as the number one so far, is just he is making NBA level plays on the college court and dominating to this level athletically. And that's really nice to see at this point. You know, those are the two main things that I look for. Does the player fit athletically in the league, and does the player fit mentally in the league? And so far, Williamson does better than anybody else in this class.
What has been the thing he's done that has stood out the most to you in terms of his, you know, is it his finishing? Is it his lack of turnovers? Is it the, he's made some shots actually, like he looks like he might have a jumper that could at least turn into something. What to you has been the most impressive thing he's done?
It's the passing. I really think that his court vision did not show itself in this level in the high school game. And he has just been so brilliant seeing the floor, making just quick little reads and just instantly processing the game. There was a clip from the Eastern Michigan game last night where Eastern Michigan was in a 1-3-1 and Trey Jones dumps ball into Zion, and Zion doesn't even have to change where he's looking. He's looking out at Jones to receive the ball, and he just turns, flicks the ball up towards the rim, and Marquise Bolden finishes it. You know, it's that type of stuff where he's making just these simple plays within the flow of the offense that I really didn't expect to see at this level. He looks like a very good passer in the mold. You know, he gets Blake Griffin comps a lot from a lot of people, but that's the one area where I'm seeing him, or outside the athleticism, that's the one area where I'm seeing him and Griffin match up really well. Is not only was Griffin a freakish athlete, Griffin's a phenomenal passer. And I think that Williamson has the chance to be that type of player from the four at the NBA level. And I'm really excited to see that, because, you know, more so than the shooting, I think that that's his ticket to being a number one option in the NBA. Doesn't really matter to me so much that he can make these off the dribble threes or make these threes off the catch, which has been great to see as well. The passing is more important to me.
When you look at him in terms of a calf situation, which I think is sort of one of the things that is most interesting to sort of project him, because it's like Barrett, you can look at any team and like fit his skill set into any team. You could do the same thing with Reddish to some degree. Bull is like, okay, you can find a place for bigs. He's just such like a unicorn in terms of his size that I find him really interesting to evaluate in that way. When you look at him on the Cavs, I will put out the caveat that I do not believe that the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2018-2019, heading into the 2019 draft, are in a position where they can at all draft based on fit. Do you agree with that premise?
Yes and no. I think that, yeah, talent is going to win out at the end of the day, but I think that they have to know what they're getting into heading into the summer, and I think that they have to be able to match the player that they want to what their roster is going to be, because I think that it'd be great if they could draft Zion Williamson and play him at the four full time. Well, we don't know that they're going to be able to do that because there's Kevin Love, there's all of the centers, there's David Nwaba. There are players who are going to potentially move Williamson out of his ideal position, his ideal development spot. So there are better examples there. I think that impacts other players more so than it does Zion. But I think just in a vacuum, thinking about the idea of drafting for fit, that's an argument that I think I'm going to have a lot with people this season, talking about where the Cavs should go, is if they don't consider who they have on the roster heading into next year and who's going to demand minutes next year, and how that fits with whatever player they draft, that's how you get in situations like having Deion Waiters and like having Anthony Bennett, guys who aren't getting the opportunities or aren't getting the development that they need because they have conflicting interests with other guys on the roster. So I think that that's the big thing that I want the Cavs to avoid this time around is draft for need, but also consider how you're going to get that player to become the player that you want him to be.
So let's say the roster next year is Kevin. Let's just say hypothetically, and a lot could change between now and then, and it's way too early for us to know this. But let's say Love, Thompson, Zizic, and Nance are all on the roster. You know, Wob is a free agent. We'll see what that's just hard, really hard to predict, considering he'll be unrestricted. But let's say they just have those four bigs on the roster, and that in theory would push him out to having to play some three, which I think we can agree is you've pointed some really good points that would be a tough fit for him in the NBA. Is that enough to pat if they're number one and they get to pick whoever they want? Is like that concern about what he might be forced into as a three A enough to make you not pick him, and B enough to where that, like, if he is in that situation, that it's enough to really hinder his development into the star that he clearly has the potential to be?
Well, and that's why I threw that caveat down there is that I don't think it applies to him as much as it might with potentially Cam Reddish. I think that he's a better example. We'll talk about that when we break him down eventually, but I think that that's much more of a concern with him than it is with Williamson. I think that game by game, Zion is showing that he's going to be able to play some three. He's going to be able to play out on the perimeter in the NBA, and he's going to be able to play in these multi-big lineups and be able to survive. You know, it's nice to see him perform as a weak side rim protector, but he doesn't look too bad defending on the perimeter at this point. You know, he gets lost a little bit at times, struggles to kind of recognize actions that are happening away from the ball, especially if he's being forced to defend like a decoy screen. Eastern Michigan gave him a couple of those, and he really struggled with recognizing where the ball was going with that. But I think that he has shown that he's quick enough. He's shown that he is agile enough to be able to defend on the perimeter. He shows pretty good play recognition when he's defending at the point of attack. And, you know, he offers that value as the secondary weak side rim protector. You know, you got a center out there. Nance is the best example there, but you've got somebody who's going to be able to protect the rim, able to defend pick and rolls. Well, it's nice to have a guy like Zion comfortably defending a spot up shooter in the corner, knowing that he takes two steps and he's at the rim blocking a shot out into the stands. I think that's a pretty good, I think that that's a workable situation for him. You know, especially with Kevin Love there, I think that those two complement each other pretty well because they're both really good passers. Zion's shown the ability to shoot a little bit. We know that Love is going to be able to work in the corner when they want to get Zion involved. And, you know, he's a pretty good ball handler, so that would take some pressure off of Sexton's development too. So there's a lot of positives to drafting Williamson, and I think that we can't get bogged down in just the idea of, well, Williamson's probably going to be best at the four in the NBA. That means that because Kevin Love is also primarily a four and you have a couple other fives, that means that he's going to fail. That's not what I'm saying here. I think that you want to consider, you know, how you're going to change your roster moving forward to accommodate Zion at the four. But I think that it's not an impediment because he's going to be able to thrive at the three and playing on the perimeter plenty in the NBA.
Wrap it up on this. As of today, November 15th, would he be the number one guy on the Cavs draft board? If you were Kobe Altman, if you're Dan Gilbert, is he the number one guy on your draft? Does he just by default right now the number one guy there?
Absolutely, and that's from every angle. From a basketball angle, it makes sense for him because he looks clear, far and away, the best player in this class right now. He looks like he's going to be a pretty good fit for the team, even if it's not 100% ideal. I think he's going to be able to bring a lot of value, even in his rookie year. And his name, the clout that he has, the highlights that he has, you know that Gilbert and the rest of the front office is going to be really excited about bringing that in, having a marketable star that isn't LeBron.
What they want. It has not been a very fun environment at the Q this year. Zion Williamson throwing down dunks and getting guys in number one jerseys. Sorry, Rodney Hood would very much be a good thing. Or number 12. Didn't he wear number 12 in high school? Maybe he could go back to that if they bring back Hood next year. But I'm very pumped about Zion. I think he would be number one on my board, no question as well. I think just all the factors you consider, he has to be. But we're going to talk about him again at some point soon, I'm sure. But Trevor, that's going to be it for today. Just a reminder to follow Trevor on Twitter, @IllegalScreens. Trevor, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And next week, Nazir Little from UNC. So we're going to stay on Tobacco Road. So next week, next Draft Friday, Nazir Little from North Carolina. So that'll be it for today's show. Thanks again to Trevor Magnani for coming on and talking about the draft and Zion. Thanks again for all those great mailbag questions. We're going to be back on Monday previewing Cavs Pistons, looking at Colin Sexton's last week, and perhaps if some news breaks over the weekend, we'll do a quick show, maybe reacting to Friday's media availability. But at the latest, we'll be back on Monday in your feeds. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at @CWMWrites. The podcast is on Twitter and Facebook at @LockedOnCavs. This has been Chris Manning, your host of Locked On Cavaliers, and this has been your episode for Friday, November 16th. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Cheers.